When Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky's stage works come to mind, we tend to think first of the world's most popular ballets, The Nutcracker, Swan Lake, Sleeping Beauty. But Tchaikovsky was also a born opera composer. The best-loved work in the Russian opera repertoire by some distance is his Yevgeny Onegin, or in English, Eugene Onegin. This is Roger Pines, dramaturg of Lyric Opera of Chicago. Onegin is the first opera I ever saw. In case you're wondering, it was at the Metropolitan Opera, and I was 7 at the time. Onegin is definitely an unexpected first opera for a 7-year-old, but I adored it then, and I adore it today. I'll be illustrating my commentary with excerpts from a recording on the Deutsche Grammophon label, sung by Sir Thomas Allen as Onegin, Mirella Freni as Tatiana, Neil Shikoff as Lenski, and Pata Burkulatze as Prince Grayman. These soloists, the Leipzig Radio Chorus, and the Staatskapelle Dresden are conducted by James Levine. The most celebrated of all Russian poets, Alexander Pushkin, scored the greatest success of his short life with his verse novel, Yevgeny Onegin. Initially released in serial form beginning in 1825 and finally published in a single volume in 1833. The title character was somewhat inspired by Lord Byron's Childe Harold, the so-called Byronic hero, the young man who doesn't fit in, an arrogant, moody, restless figure, easily bored, and a bit of a wanderer. But it's not the hero that has earned this story such a special place in our hearts. It's the heroine, Tatiana. She and the novel's other characters brought to life a particular era, a whole world in the Russia of the early 19th century, chiefly that of the landed gentry, but also to a certain extent the aristocracy. Pushkin was writing from experience. The mores and foibles of characters like those of Onegin were already familiar to him, and he made them totally believable. When Tchaikovsky's brother suggested the idea of an Onegin opera, the composer thought this wasn't really stage material, and that because the whole country was so familiar with it, he would never be able to meet expectations. Luckily, someone else was eager to see a Tchaikovsky Onegin, the singer Yelizaveta Lavrovskaya. She used all her powers of persuasion in changing his attitude. Looking at Tchaikovsky's 12 operas, we see that he wrote 3 of the libretti himself and co-wrote 2 others. For Onegin, he worked with the composer Konstantin Shilovsky on the text, taking it from Pushkin wherever he could. Of course, a lot of editing was needed to create an operatic structure from this story. Tchaikovsky came in for a fair amount of criticism for the libretto. What he anticipated proved correct. With language and story so well known to his audience, everyone seemed to put his or her oar in about how he should have proceeded. But he loved working with Pushkin's words. He was still a young man, not yet 40, and he created the opera in a sort of youthful ecstasy, especially when dealing with Tatiana. Her letter scene was the first portion of the Onegin score that he composed. In this, his 5th opera, the keynote is lyricism. Huge dramatic outbursts are kept to a minimum. Most of the time, Tchaikovsky was writing intimately, conversationally. He subtitled Onegin Lyrical Scenes, and it's lyric voices that are needed. Juicy lyric, certainly, but lyric nonetheless. It was actually conservatory students who premiered this opera. Only in Onegin's final scene would the heft of a dramatic sound be helpful to the singers. Audiences first heard the opera at the Mali Theater in Moscow in March of 1879. The premiere was less than triumphant, but the city's most important theater, the Bolshoi, presented the first professional performance in 1881, and St. Petersburg Mariinsky Theater followed 3 years later. Those performances helped enormously in increasing name recognition for Tchaikovsky. It's the 1820s. We're in the Russian countryside, in the garden of Madame Larina's estate. The 2 Larina daughters, 17-year-old Tatiana and her younger sister Olga, are singing a melancholy duet that makes their mother nostalgic. she's with a girl's nurse, Filipovna, and tells her about her youth. At her father's insistence, she married, leaving fashionable city life and coming to the country. Eventually, she achieved a certain contentment, helped by the love and trust of her husband. Peasant workers now arrive to celebrate the end of the harvest. After they've gone, Olga, who's gotten a real kick out of watching them dance, admits that, unlike her sister, she isn't one to dream and sigh. Instead, she keeps a happy outlook and expects to enjoy a sweet life. It's interesting that her mother and nurse are both identified as mezzo-sopranos, but Olga is meant to be a contralto. Contraltos who can portray teenagers don't grow on trees, but a young contralto is really what's required here. Suddenly, she sees her fiancé, the poet Lenski, approaching. He appears, bringing a friend with him, a sophisticated young man from the city, Eugene Onegin. Tchaikovsky imagined Lenski to be 19 and Onegin 22. When the four young people are left alone, Lenski takes Onegin aside and explains that the older of the girls is Tatiana. Onegin is surprised that, as a poet, Lenski would choose Olga, whom Onegin finds pretty, but nothing more. When he's alone with Tatiana, he wonders if she doesn't find the country dull. She answers that she passes the time by reading and daydreaming. He responds that he used to be the same way himself. After they walk off together, Lenski has a moment alone with Olga to declare that he loves her with a poet's heart and that he already loved her when they were children. Filipovna assumes that Tatiana must have walked with Onegin down to the lake. When they reappear, Onegin explains that he came to the country to care for his uncle, who's left him a fortune. He callously recalls finding it tedious to sit beside the uncle day and night waiting for him to die. After the two enter the house, Filipovna thinks of Tatiana, who's been looking so timid. The worried nurse wonders, could Tatiana be attracted to Onegin? In Tatiana's bedroom, she's too restless to sleep, so she asks Filipovna to tell some stories of her younger days. The nurse recalls her own arranged marriage, but she suddenly stops. Tatiana isn't listening. The girl feels overwhelmed by longing and is about to burst into tears. She finally confesses that she's in love. But she doesn't say with whom. She simply asks Filipovna to move the table for her and to bring her pen and paper. Once she's alone, we have the core of the opera, the letter scene. The eagerness of sopranos to sing Tatiana has everything to do with this episode, which offers glorious music and a wonderful dramatic arc. What an amazing buildup we hear in the orchestra before Tatiana bursts out, "It's foolish to write to him, but I have to, because I love him." There's such a sweep to the phrases here, and we're instantly caught up in it. Tatiana starts a letter, but almost instantly discards it. She begins again, explaining that she has to write. She can't hide her love. Then she wonders what made Onegin visit her family in the first place. This is an entirely new theme, quiet, questioning, and inward-looking. Tatiana knew from the first moment that there could be no other man for her but Onegin. Now we have the theme most closely associated with Tatiana. Here, more than anywhere else in the opera, the role of a solo instrument takes on enormous dramatic importance. In this case, it's the oboe, with that piercingly beautiful timbre. No sound from the orchestra could be more affecting at this moment. It's Tatiana wondering whether Onyegin is a protecting angel for her, or whether he'll abandon her instead. Tatiana begs Onyegin to save her from her anguish. Finishing the letter, she's terrified to read it through, but she finally declares that she trusts in Onyegin's honor. Tatiana absolutely belongs to a full lyric voice, not a light lyric. Paradoxically, a lot of youthful voices don't offer much in the middle range, and yet that's exactly where Tchaikovsky centers a lot of Tatiana's music. The singer can be free to concentrate on varying her vocal color to suit the text in all its poignant intimacy. It's amazing that Pushkin had such profound understanding of the yearnings experienced by a girl of this age, and that Tchaikovsky could express them with such truth. The day dawns, and Filipovna appears to wake Tatiana. She hands the nurse the letter, and after a lot of persuasion, Filipovna agrees to ask her grandson to deliver it. We can assume that the next scene occurs just a few days later. We're in Madame Larina's garden. There's an endearing chorus with peasant girls picking berries before Tatiana appears, apprehensive and desperately attempting to compose herself for her meeting with Onyegin. When he arrives, he admits first that her candor has touched him. But he confesses that marriage and domestic life offer him no appeal. If they did, he would marry Tatiana. But he knows that marriage would be a mistake for them both. Just through habit, his love for her would eventually cool. He hopes his response won't make her angry. These are difficult sentiments to bring to musical life, but Tchaikovsky manages to do it. Onyegin's aria is musically elegant, but it would have been a mistake for Tchaikovsky to make it too soulful. Onyegin doesn't intend to be anything but straightforward. The Onyegin of this scene is often described as callous, but the music and text don't really communicate that, on the surface, at any rate. Onyegin doesn't treat Tatiana inhumanly, he's just being honest. He can't be played as nasty and cold, otherwise we'd be annoyed with Tatiana for wanting anything to do with him. We have to see something in him that would attract her. On stage, a production's director working with the singer's physicality and the singer himself through vocal color can create the attitude that so scars Tatiana at this moment. Here's the aria's second section in which Tchaikovsky gives Onyegin something approaching but not quite achieving tenderness. When, after telling her that he can love her with a brother's love, he sings, «Il может быть еще нежнее», or perhaps more than that. Я вас люблю, любовью брата, и может быть еще нежней, и может быть, и может быть еще, еще. Bidding Tatiana to exercise greater control over her feelings, since other men may not understand her as he has done, Onyegin leads her back to the Larina house. What an extraordinary scene this is, and what an impact it continues to make. After all, in life, unrequited love is something most people have experienced. Tatiana's feelings just hit home. It's that simple. Without singing a note, simply by listening to Onyegin, the soprano playing Tatiana, in her physical and facial responses, can make this one of the most meaningful moments of her role. As his words gradually sink in, we're watching a young girl only just barely keeping herself from falling apart emotionally. Now for the second act. Madame Larina is hosting a ball to celebrate Tatiana's name day. The scene begins with a waltz, and it includes a very significant choral contribution. All the guests are delighted to be there, what with such grand occasions being rather rare in the country. This is a wonderful episode in the way it takes in everyone present. Here's the opening with all the guests. Here are the older female guests gossiping about Onyegin and Tatiana as they dance together. The women assume he'll marry her and make her miserable, thanks to his unpleasant nature, his gambling, and his drinking. You'll also hear a bit from the young ladies, asking a dashing young captain to dance. Onyegin regrets having accepted Lenski's suggestion that he attend the ball. His idea of getting back at his friend is to make him jealous by dancing with Olga. A few of the girls ask for some verses from a French guest, Monsieur Triquet. After he sings a sentimental song praising Tatiana, Olga dances a mazurka with Onyegin. When he asks his friend what's wrong, Lenski responds sarcastically before denouncing Onyegin for his behavior towards Olga and then challenges him to a duel. Madame Larina is horrified that this quarrel is taking place in her home. Lenski launches the scene's finale by remembering that it was here that he spent so much time as a child and experienced true love. Tatiana is stunned, Onyegin remorseful, Olga refuses to blame herself. Madame Larina worries about the quarrel's outcome, and the guests sympathize with Lenski. Onyegin accepts the challenge, and after enraging Onyegin by calling him a seducer, Lenski bids Olga a painful farewell and rushes away. At dawn, presumably the next day, we're at a water mill near a stream. Lenski appears with his second, Zaretsky, who leaves Lenski alone to wonder what his fate will be. He reflects on both his lost youth and his love for Olga. Lenski is really the classic Russian lyric tenor role. Tchaikovsky adored elegant singing, and he understood bel canto principles. The role has often been a success for singers who have succeeded in Bellini and Donizetti, also in Mozart. The famous Act II aria really breathes longing and despair. As with the letter scene, it's not about making a big vocal gesture. It's the character bringing the feeling from his innermost depths with an eloquence reminding us that Lenski is, after all, a poet. Prasod Onegin arrives with his second, a certain Monsieur Guillot. Alone with their thoughts, Onegin and Lenski quietly conclude that honor must be maintained. At a sign from Zaretsky, the two men separate and each walks several paces. They turn around, Onegin shoots first, and Lenski falls. He's dead, leaving Onegin shattered. 4 years pass between Act Two and Act Three, which begins at a ball in a fashionable home in St. Petersburg. The guests are dancing a polonaise. Onegin is there alone. Having killed his friend, he's traveled aimlessly ever since. Now, age 26, he's returned to St. Petersburg weary and aimless. Prince Greymon arrives. He's a distinguished-looking gentleman, some years older than the woman he's escorting. Onegin is stunned to realize that this is Tatiana. While Onegin speaks with the prince, Tatiana asks the male guests about the man with her husband. When they identify him as Onegin, she just barely stays calm, saying only that Onegin was her neighbor in the country. Meanwhile, Greymon explains to Onegin that in his 2 years of marriage to Tatiana, his melancholy life has turned joyful. Greymon sings especially stately legato lines that ask for extraordinary richness of sound, a really ample lower range, and profound expression that generally only a highly experienced artist can provide. Greymon introduces Onegin to Tatiana as his friend and relative. Tatiana makes polite conversation before indicating that she's tired. Greymon leads her out of the ballroom, leaving Onegin astonished at how the girl he once rejected has changed. He realizes that he loves her and is haunted by the image of her. A few days have passed. During that time, a letter from Onegin has left Tatiana very uneasy indeed. Now he appears at her home and throws himself at her feet, lamenting having once rejected her. She coolly reminds him of how he made her suffer, and then wonders what appeals to him about her now. Her extended solo passage formally begins their duet. It starts with a certainty that we know Tatiana is managing only through sheer force of will. Here we have the greatest challenge facing the soprano. Her character started the opera as a shy 17-year-old, but she's now a very conflicted, yet ultimately determined woman who has made her way in society. without doing anything artificial or excessive, the soprano has to show this growth in her demeanor and her voice, bringing a special sort of grandeur to the end of the scene's opening section. Onegin insists that he burns with passion for Tatiana. The two of them reflect sadly that they were once so close to true happiness. Как близко. How close. This is the opera's most touching moment. Listen to the plaintiveness of it, the quiet agony. Fate, says Tatiana, is demanding that Onegin leave her, but he refuses and finally draws from her the confession she has struggled to resist. Those words, Ya vas люблю, I love you. But Tatiana intends to stay with her husband. Onegin begs her not to ruin her life, and he insists that it's heaven's will that she be his. Finally tearing herself away from him and bidding him farewell forever, she runs from the room, leaving Onegin in despair. These final pages are as dramatic as anything written for lyric voices in Russian repertoire. It's interesting that Onegin's final line is mainly a cappella. It's considerate of Tchaikovsky. He gives the baritone time to gather his energy for that intimidating ascent to high G. Many listeners are disappointed that we're left not with Tatiana, but with the rather less sympathetic Onegin. But he is the hero, or anti-hero, more accurately, and neither Tchaikovsky nor Pushkin is judging him. He is, in the end, who he is. And people can draw their own conclusions about how he'll spend the rest of his life. In Eugene Onegin, Tchaikovsky boldly took on a beloved work of literature. As with Verdi and Otello, here was an example of opera not just proving worthy of its source material, but ennobling and enriching it. Eugene Onegin is an unforgettable experience in the theater that unites the genius of Pushkin and Tchaikovsky, two of the greatest creative artists Russia has ever known. excerpts from Eugene Onegin were furnished courtesy of Warner Music Group, the official education and promotional music provider of Lyric Opera of Chicago. Thank you for listening.